Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2012 Alleluia Conference. For more information about Alleluia, visit our website where you will find conference dates and details, audio and video recordings, and a list of confirmed clinicians for next summer's event. For this information and more, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.
That's four voices. Now, steady beat. That's probably, is that the most fun? I don't know. They're all fun. Growing in Grace. What is it? Growing in Grace uses a beat buddy, which this is mine. Any kind of little animal that has beans in the bottom. You can get a little stuffed animal that will work fine, but it's not as pleasing. You don't feel the beat with your hands as well, unless it's got that heavy bottom that's got beans in it. Mm-hmm. So, steady beat, steady beat. Put the beat on your head. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. And you know, we always use fours or eights. Because that's the phrasing that we're teaching. We don't do anything in triplets with fours and fives. We're always using a set of four or a set of eight. So one, two, three, four. And the other things that we use to do that with are, if you don't want beat buddies that are actually a person, these I got for like 25 cents at Target. They're just, what do you call these from the 90s?
Packy sacks.
Packy sacks.
And do you give every child one, or like with your beat buddies, do you have one buddy that an individual
has? We all have one. Okay. That is mine, and I think it's like a, it's one of those, it's bigger than theirs is. But then the ones they have, I got at the dollar store, and they don't take them home. I mean, they just live at choir, and they all have
one.
Their beat buddy. And when we send home the take-home bag, which we'll talk about, I can't get distracted by that, but when we send home the take-home bag, it has a beat buddy in it that they take around with them for the week, and they can practice in the car and wherever else with their beat buddy that they get to take home. So I like the beat buddy because they get attached to that. You know, a koosh ball or whatever, it's a lot of fun, but they really think this is their friend. And if they're all different, they can adopt one for the year. You know, if you buy those, like if you go on Oriental Trading, they'll let you buy those clearance bags of just all these random little teeny stuffed animals. And that way they all have a different one, and they think that's their friend, their choir friend for the year. And I say, when you don't come, he misses you. You need to come see him. He misses you. We'll take care of him, but he's going to miss you. Okay, let's do rhythm sticks for a minute. What do rhythm sticks look like anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Are those the same thing? They're different length, and this one's got flat ends. That does make a difference. And look at this. This one's short and has flat ends. And here's what I'll tell you I think about rhythm sticks. I don't use these very often. These long, because when they're, you know, they'll hit each other, and their little arms are not even as long as this stick. I mean, this is like us trying to bang baseball bats together. They're too little for that. So I leave these for the big kids. And we use these most of the time. I think I got these at Kinder Music. y'all have these? I think I got these at Kinder Music. And to me, these are the right size for those little hands. And the other thing I love about these is that you can do them this way. You can do them this way. You can do them this way on the floor. Because they have that nice flat end that's big enough to hit if you have a little coordination. So you can hammer. You can beat them together. They can do them like this. That's why I like these. So let's do... show you a couple of more before we go. These are quiet rhythm sticks. So you have this one, which makes a really good thunk in this left hand when you hit it. So they can feel that beat. They can feel what they're doing with the left hand as well as the right, or if they're left-handed. I like these a lot. And sometimes they're sort of expensive, but if you buy the kind like at the dollar store that you would never paint with because all the stuff comes off of them. You know, there you go. We love these. And this is another option if you don't have enough money to go buy Kinder Music sticks, or if you just want something a little quieter or easier to store. These are nice because your little piece of music can be playing and you can still hear it even when 15 people are banging their sticks as hard as they can. So, but Amy, come help me. Let's... Music in Motion has things? I like Music in Motion a lot. Let's... Okay, what we got? Alright, let's say we have 10. Three sets of those. Two sets of these. Does not have any. Now, a steady beat is all about their playing exactly what it is that you're playing. So I tell my children, you can't turn around to your friend and think you've got to watch your director, which that's a good lesson for later. You have to watch me, and that way you can see what I'm doing as well as hear what I'm doing. And this is really too fast. You aim a little bit slower than that. Some of them will tend to play the rhythm of the song instead of playing the steady beat. So if you choose your pieces carefully that you start this with, it makes it a lot easier on them if most of it is the steady beat anyway. Once upon a time in a nursery rhyme, there were three bears. Three voices. Because here's your low and high in a way that they can remember it. The papa bear has a low voice. The baby bear has a high voice. And they know what a papa bear voice and a baby bear voice sound like. If you can just associate the high, maybe the baby bear is sitting on the papa bear's shoulders. He has the low voice. The baby bear has the high voice. And then I say, were we finished with our story? No! Just then, Goldilocks woke up and broke up the party and beat it out of there. She beat it out of there.
Bye, bye, bye.
Okay, when I teach rhythm instruments, I do not get hooked on my bracelet, first of all. When I teach rhythm instruments, I always teach sticks first, because you can teach the discipline of when it's not your turn to play them, they're sitting on your knees. And when it is time to play them, then they're up here and they go right back to your knees. We won't go through all of that, but I teach those first, and that's all we use for a little while. And then after a while, we add in any kind of shaker. It doesn't matter what it looks like. These are the ones that Baylor sent over to me. They look like eggs. And if you don't have these, an Easter egg glued shut. And I think really duct tape works better than glue, because sometimes even super glue doesn't stick that plastic. But duct tape will stay on there. And there's pill bottles over here that make good shakers. If you don't use a lot of pills, then there's someone in your church who does. And ask them for these. And my secret formula is 5 beans and then about a third of the way up, rice. I find if you put all beans in it, it's too loud and it doesn't shake very well because they don't slosh quite right. And if you put all rice, it doesn't make a very good sound because it's not heavy enough. So that is how I like it to sound. And you can just experiment and see. And those, the children cannot open. If you use a film can, a very determined 3-year-old can open it. And I'll tell you my story about that. I was teaching Bible school 2 weeks ago or so. We had Bible school. And I was preschool music rotation. Well, they decided that they wanted all the preschoolers in the whole Bible school to do preschool music at the same time. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a worship rally. And I had that exact reaction of, you people are nuts. But that was what they wanted to do. So I started looking at it, and I took the preschool rotation material, and I looked at what the big kids do in worship rally, and sort of combined it a little bit. No flags, no pledges, not any of that other stuff. But we did the music, and I said, the thing that makes me the saddest about this is that there were a lot of places that I would use a shaker or a pair of sticks, and there are 94 preschoolers in here. What am I, you know, I can't. And then it was my daughter who said, well, I was thinking to make them. I mean, that had occurred to me. I just need to make shakers, but what am I going to put all these shakers in? Everything I had ever made shakers out of, there's no way I could come up with 94 of them before. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we did. We got those, and we had them under their chairs when they came in. And I just, if they took it out from under their chair, I asked their teacher to go get it from them. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do that after like the first 5 minutes of the first day. Mm-hmm. They left them under there. And we used those, and we used these. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful. It worked great. I'll just tell you that. I loved it. And I might, I don't know, do it again. Maybe. I don't know. But that worked well. So, you know, even if you have too many kids or you have no budget, you know, rice in the prescription bottle, you know, you got something fun. You have something fun to play with. You know, when you're keeping a steady beat, this is a difficult thing because you're crossing the midline and each hand is doing something slightly different. That's hard. That's why we start out like this with preschoolers. You're patting like this. This is long before I've ever given them a rhythm stick. You're patting on something or you're patting on the floor, but with both hands. And this is also really hard to do this to a steady beat because you have each side of your body doing two different things. If they could jump well, it'd be easier for them to jump than to be trying to do this to a steady beat. You want both sides of their body to be doing the same thing. So this works. Or if they're nodding their head, you know, we do our shoulders sometimes if it's kind of slow. All kinds of things like that. But you don't want them to be doing something with one hand that the other hand's not doing. It will help a lot for them to learn that, if you will. Let's stand up. This is later. Why don't you put your sticks under? And I would say that a choir too. Let's stand up. And I need a piece of music. Let me see what it's called. Joy to the World, but don't play it yet. And what I have is a hula hoop on the floor. In my choir, we have to use three or four of these. Your choir, you may have to only use one, or you may need 20. I don't know. But I have about three of these set up in the room, and each one has got a teacher. And we're standing back here. And Joy to the World comes on, and I've taught them what to do. And we're going to march 8-beat phrases. There's a little introduction. We're going to march 8. Y'all stay still. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and touch the hula hoop. 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now, do we step on the hula hoop? Do we kick it? Do we even put our foot on it a little bit? You get as close to it as you can without your foot touching it at all. And that's part of the game. Now let's hear Follow Jesus. And you all try it. You guys have a long, skinny hula hoop back there. Do you see it? And you all, whoever can fit, can come play. Who will sit on the floor with me. I've learned that I have to ask for volunteers for this and not just say, some people have a skirt on. Okay, let's do it. Amy, let's listen to Joy to the World again. And we're going to sit down on the floor looking at each other. And we're going to put our feet up to each other's feet. And we're going to hold hands. And we're going to rock to the same beat. Obviously, you have to demonstrate this a lot before they do it. And you have to wear pants.
Yeah.
Okay, now stop. I'm going to give you one more. Turn around. She's going to put her back on my back, which I had demonstrated this with a four-year-old, and it is hard. But when they're the same size, like elbows, when they're the same size, it's fine. And that way, someone who has a really good steady beat in their head is kind of forcing that steady beat on someone else who might, you know. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And some people I want on my back doing a steady beat with, either because they really need some help trying to figure that out, or because I know they'll just tear apart whoever, you know, they'll be flinging them across with their elbow, and you know, you can predict that. Who needs to be your partner? Somebody does. All right. Rhythm sticks, we have done that. I don't want to forget anything this time. I won't get fussed at.
Are those ideas in the the curriculum?
That rocking is not, but those pieces are. Every piece of music that I'm using is on their CD.
Okay.
Now, that rocking, that's something I just do a lot, all the time.
What about the stepping
curriculum? This one is in there.
Okay.
But I did this before I before I had that curriculum, too. So I can vouch for that activity, is what I'm saying. I really like doing that with children, and they're intense about it, and they focus on it. And that's another thing that they like teaching their parents to do at parent night. Do y'all have parent night? Let me just ask this question. Do your fours and fives perform, your kindergartners? Yes?
In a separate place.
In a separate place.
Mm-hmm. Ours perform twice. They do it on the Christmas concert and the spring concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Is there anybody whose fours and fives don't perform at all? Not anybody. Sort of?
Yeah. My twos perform.
Wow.
We start at 30 minutes because it's a preschool.
Yeah.
And they perform at Christmas.
Oh, because
only
they,
once.
Yeah, those parents do want to see
them. They
want to
see their kids
something
on the stage. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying about these little Christmas songs. Just pull one and sing it all the whole fall, because then by the time you get to Christmas, they won't think a thing about doing whatever it is you want them to do with that song. I know. Especially gift twos. That's so fun.
Precious.
I mean, I would think that was a lot of fun, but I would not do what I'm doing with fours and fives. The gap is just, you know, when you have a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old, okay, but when you have a two and a four, the difference is huge. You're changing a lot. Even my children from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, there's a lot different about what I can do with them. And it's not just because they've learned it already. It's because they just developmentally are moving really, really, really fast. Okay. We, at my church, we do not put fours and fives in church. We're a fairly formal situation, liturgical situation, and it would not really be appropriate for them to be there. And I don't think they would enjoy it. But if you're in a situation where it would be good for them, or where only their parents are watching, I like for them to get to do that. And so instead, what I do, because I know the parents want to see why are we learning all these songs? Nobody ever even, we have parent night. And they come and they can bring their grandmas, their moms and dads, and we have regular choir time. They come in and they sit around with us in large group and they sing, they listen to us. And some things we teach them the hello song and get them to sing it back. And that's a lot of fun. And then when they go to small groups, they take their mom, dad, grandma, whoever they brought with them. And then they come back out, and then at the end we do the stand up and sing them some things and do some motions and, you know, like what they would be doing if they were in preschool, doing something for moms and dads. And I like it that way too. So, you know, did you all write any sticky situations on the wall? I don't see a whole lot. We were going to sort those out. Location is one issue for people. Room size and room condition, we talked about that a little bit this morning. Whoever was in here this morning is an issue. Age range is an issue. Do y'all have fours and fives together? You have threes, fours, and fives together? No. Some people do.
We're going to have threes and fours just because we're in
threes and fours, yeah.
Sometimes
the group is
really
small.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 1 year we combined our fours and fives because there were only two fours. Mm-hmm. And we had probably 13 or 14 fives. Mm-hmm. There were only two fours. And who knows why? Mm-hmm. What happened that winter? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. But once we got going, here came another one. And here came another one. And we ended up with eight plus 13.
Yeah.
And you know what we had to do at Christmas?
So you
had to split them back because it just was too big of a group to have any fun with. We couldn't really do any kind of crazy circle games, or it was just too cumbersome. And we had the workers to do it, so we. So I guess we didn't have faith enough. I don't know to have a 4-year-old choir with two kids. We just didn't.
Well, if you only had the two, the others might not have come.
I was gonna say, have you ever tried to do it with?
With just two kids?
With just two kids.
Yeah.
If they get it in their minds that they're not going to participate, then they're not going to participate.
You're just
sitting
there.
Yes.
I've never had a group that was all like that, but we've had nights when there was a blizzard or...
Oh, right, and you had
a
class.
It's my same people, but there's only two of them, you know, and that's hard enough. But if it's the same two people all the time, and they, there's not anybody to, I mean, there's something to that group feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would combine even, you know, up to first, second grade to get a good group to do something with. I would.
On the performing?
Yeah,
I had
go.
A kindergarten teacher a couple of years ago who really liked, she taught a lot of little songs that she wanted them to sing sometime. And our adults had prayer meeting during that same time. And I just talked to the pastor and he said, sure, that's fine. We came in at the last 5 minutes of prayer meeting.
Yeah.
And the parents knew they weren't normally in prayer meeting. They came that night.
Yeah.
But it and a lot of our prayer meeting was the older people who, you know, would love seeing them. And so
sure
that was
they
a way
would,
for
sure.
them to get to sing, but it wasn't a big production and it wasn't, and it was, you know, it didn't take, it was during the regular time, like I said,
yeah.
with the parents coming in, but they went over to the main building and went in and sang. So that was another opportunity.
That is nice. I like that.
Worked.
Our children's choirs wear robes and stoles and, you know, shiny black shoes and stand there. You know, I just, our fours and fives are not ready to do that. And there's a huge number of people looking back at them. And it's just not the right place. If I were somewhere else, I might make a different decision. But I agree with what we're doing. And it's always been that way. But I'm not trying to change it because I like how it is for where we are. We're talking about people having different issues and different situations. I went to a writer's conference at Lifeway. We were writing some kind of Sunday school curriculum, I guess, and what were we talking about? I think hula hoops. No, pool noodles. And somebody who's from a really small church said, you have to understand, we can't go out and buy a pool noodle for everybody to have to play this game that you're talking about, you know? And so we had this whole discussion about, yeah, you have to be sensitive to people who can't go buy all these things that we're putting on this supply list, you know, which who can go buy everything? I mean, nobody, you know? And we went through talking about that, and this other guy was talking about, I guess it was my church, and we're right in the middle of downtown, all concrete, parking lots, security doors at every entrance, and finally the guy that couldn't buy the pool noodles, he said, you know, I can't buy any pool noodles, but I got grass. I thought, well, you know, there isn't any great situation and terrible situation. There's really not. There's just different. Because sure enough, I would love to have grass. And we don't even have a situation that's safe to take children outside, much less any grass to find once we get out there. I mean, who knows outside in the middle of downtown on a Wednesday night? You just would not take little children outside. You just wouldn't do it. So that's something that he's got that we wouldn't even think about. When they say, go outside and plant a flower, go touch the grass and talk about God. Maybe, you know, we can't do any of that. So I've got to adapt for that kind of stuff where he's adapting a pool noodle. You know, we're just all doing our own thing. At that same conference, we were writing Bible school material, and I can't remember, somebody who works there, I don't know, told this story about going to teach people how to teach Bible school. And there was a lady who was going to teach 5th and 6th grade Bible school, and she had just gotten recruited right that minute. And she was nervous, like that very week before she got there. She was nervous as she could be. And he said, you know, I wouldn't worry so much about it. Just go through this book and pull out the things that look reasonable to you that you want to do, that you think they would have fun with. You don't have to do anything, everything that's in that book. And she says, oh no, I'm not messing with the Holy Word of God. So, you know, there are people out there who think if you buy a curriculum, this is how you teach it to children, and you're doing it wrong if you don't, which is not true. You're the one sitting in front of that little group of children, and you're the one who knows them, and you know where you are, and that's your responsibility. That piece of curriculum or that CD or that whatever it is that you're using, that's just a tool for you. It's for your benefit. You make your own decisions about things. If you're the one teaching it, you're smarter than anybody who wrote something in that book. Okay, we're going to play Walk. Can y'all stand up, please? Set your stuff down. All of this stuff right here is in Growing in Grace. We got 20 more minutes. We're good. Go ahead and play Walk, and then let's just keep the CD rolling after that. Y'all face this way. Second row, face that way. This is Walk, and we're going to walk to it. Ready, set, go. Now. our phrase, well, it's eight beats. Eight beats, we're going to go down. And then when we get to the end, we're going to hear a sound. When we get to the end of our eight jumps, and I want you to tell me what sound it is that you hear. Because when you hear that sound, you're going to flip around, and you're going to jump back the other way. Now, why am I not saying hop? To a rhythm down, okay? We're jumping is what we're doing. It has 2 feet, we're jumping. Now let's see what we get to do.
I'm going to bring my, my jumping shoes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
move.
Whole piece, the whole marching, the whole, and there are all kinds of things you can do with those. Mm-hmm. And then when they've got all of that in their head and it's starting to be a little old, mm-hmm. about December, January, you have this where it just plays little, mm-hmm. and they have to think while they're moving, mm-hmm. what to move to. So that's a good way to wear out your kids and use their little brains and their ears. Let's make sure we don't forget anything. I got in trouble for that this morning. Is there any other anomalies that y'all want to talk about? We've kind of fit a lot of them in as we've been talking about groups that are too small, groups that are too big, little rooms, big rooms. You know, if you have a really small room, you've just got to take the furniture out or put it along the edges. You just have to because you need room to move around. Or if you want to set a table in the middle of it and you're doing your circle around it, that's helpful. I will say, if you've got carpet squares in a circle, which that's what we do, then if you're doing that kind of activity, do not walk around on the carpet squares because you know what happens?
Yeah.
When you land on it, it goes right out from under. So I tell them, if you're walking on the carpet squares, I'm going to ask you to sit on the carpet squares and you can watch. Mm-hmm. You have to walk around them. Your feet are touching the carpet or the floor, mm-hmm. whatever the case there is. Not the carpet squares, because they can get hurt. So anything else? Not enough time, too much time. Y'all are good.
We're going to have a special needs child this next year.
Oh, I have a picture, and I have a whole section on that. Keep going, though. Ask your question.
Well, I mean, what do you recommend besides kind of like a one-on-one?
I have a whole section on that. Hang on. I'll have to find it, though. Don't pardon me just a second. I see if you were preschoolers. You'd be at like running
out
the
door. Yeah, really. That's what I say when something wrong. Come on, hurry up. Let's tell it. We're ready now. That's not him. I'm going to have to stop the other. Are y'all PowerPoint experts?
No.
No. I learned PowerPoint last week.
My kids
keep doing
it.
I learned it last week. That is my friend Sam. Aww. And he'll be 14 in August. But this is when he was in kindergarten choir.
Is that her grandson?
Uh-huh.
She was talking about him.
Yeah. It just happens that I have a picture of him because we're friends, and that's why this is, but he's not the only person I've had like this. The thing I will say about them is it depends, obviously, on what kind of special needs you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It really does. But for little people like this, he thinks like a preschooler. And so your fourth, fifth, sixth grade choir person is going to have a really hard time. because he thinks like a preschooler. And we're not so much. You know, he used to run out the door and we'd have to chase him and catch him because he thought it was hysterical to be hiding and nobody, you know, could find him. So, you know, obviously there were some issues with him that we could control in the other children, but he thought like they did. He just didn't control it any. So I find it very easy to integrate him into what we're doing. And he had, like, he wasn't potty trained when he was in kindergarten. So we had somebody who had his bag and who was assigned to kind of deal with that if that need arose. So there was a different physical issue, but we had one teacher who was assigned to go deal with that quietly, where the other kids wouldn't even really notice what we were doing if it needed dealing with. His other issue, that he was nonverbal at that point, so we couldn't ask him anything. He would make sounds at us, but he didn't answer anything we were asking. And I'll tell you, this might make me cry, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I had him all the way through four-year-old choir. This is when he was in kindergarten choir. And about, it was before Christmas, maybe October or November, his mom called me at 9:30 on a Wednesday night on the phone, and she said they were riding home, and here's what Sam was doing. And she made this song at me in the phone, and it was a song that we had been singing at choir. And all the words weren't quite right, but the tune was absolutely there. He's Martha Kirkland's greatest. I mean, he was right on it. And I said, Joy, we sang that in choir, but she could not understand what he was saying. She said, can you please send it to me so I can sing it with him, please? Can you? And I had to go get to the computer and find a scanner and send her the piece of music so that she could sing it with him when he woke up in the morning, because she had never heard him sing anything ever before. And we're thinking that he's sitting there, you know, because he doesn't look at us. Half the time he doesn't even sit on the carpet square. He, you know, somebody's having to bring him back. I mean, we're just thinking he's not engaged at all, but he had memorized that whole song. Mm-hmm. And as well as his mouth could do it, he was singing it. And to his mom, that was a beautiful sound. Mm-hmm. When I've taught preschool, I've had little people in wheelchairs, and there's some issues with that, but again, I just try really hard not to differentiate anything I'm doing for anybody unless it really is physically totally necessary. And I kind of look at, like, in preschool, they're all special needs children. Because they really aren't really all different. They're not all the way formed into what personality they're going to have. They've all got different homes that they come through. They've been through some challenges that we don't know about before they got. I know you've had children come from all kinds of situations, but, you know, there's a little girl whose mama left her daddy, and they just had to move in with their grandparents. Here she comes walking in. To me, you know, that's no less difficult to deal with than Sam, because she wouldn't do anything but cry. She sobbed through the whole choir practice. She wouldn't do anything but cry. That's a special needs child. There's a little kid who wore his Crocs to choir without his mom realizing it. And he got hammered all the way up all four flights of stairs because he had his Crocs on and we're not allowed to wear Crocs at church. And then he came into choir. That's a special needs child. His head is set somewhere that the rest of theirs are not. And I think if you were teaching 10, 11, 12-year-olds and asking me, that I would say, well, you're going to have to look at his developmental age and see how that fits with what you're doing. You're going to have to look at what his IEP is at school and see really what he's capable of, because you don't want to expect less than what they're capable of. And we learned that lesson with Sam, because we had some teachers who just kind of treated him like a two-year-old. And guess what? He's not. He's five like everybody else. And he could do everything they were doing. He might not attend to it as long. His little fingers may not be able to do everything they're doing with their fingers, but he could understand everything we're doing because he's a preschooler. The problem is that Sam is 14 now, and he's still kind of preschooler. And that's where it's difficult. But I feel lucky in preschool that it's really not that hard. And my approach is, yes, sometimes you have to have a person assigned to that little child. If there are physical needs that make them different, or if their behavior is so out of control that they really need monitoring every second, and not by the group monitor, but by one person who understands when they've crossed the line and take them to the chair. Because if I'm sitting at the front teaching, I don't want to have to keep stopping and talking to that person. In that case, you do. You need one good grown-up that just belongs to that person. And I think that's the best for them, and it's the best for everyone else, because their lessons don't get interrupted by what you're doing. Y'all have any other thoughts about that? I'm supposed to let you go have Dr. Beverly Flows, whatever. Do you have anything? I think there's another picture of him right after that one. If you go, I don't know what.
Well, I've taught children for 40 years, and I just finished. I just gave up in the choir after 43 years.
Oh.
And for the first time I had a child, I couldn't control. And he finally ended up, his grandfather started coming with him.
Mm-hmm. I've done that.
That was the only thing that worked. Because I thought, out of all these years, I've always been able to find something that would work.
Yep.
And I pulled out all the tricks out of the bag. And I finally said, well, this is, so Lala started coming to choir with him. And well, Lala couldn't always control him, but it was better.
At least there's an extra
doing.
Person. Yeah. I had three times I have expelled somebody. And I will tell you that all of those were more than 10 years ago. So I do think it has a lot to do with you experience this one child, and then the next time one comes along, it's familiar. It's not, you know, two of those were from the same family. But we did the same thing. Just invited their parents to come and sit with them. And when that didn't work, you need to take a week off. That's what I mean by expelled. You're not never coming back, but you need to go sit in prayer meeting for a week while the rest of us are having choir, and then the next week you can come back, and you still have to bring your mom, you know. And we worked through that, and it worked on all of them. This past year, I had a little sweet thing who was really too young. He was like a September birthday, and his spirit was just young, and his parents didn't like him in the nursery, so they put him in choir, even though he wasn't assigned in his age group. I mean, technically it was his age group, or we wouldn't have put him in that group, but he was a behavior issue, and the problem was he has an IQ of, like, I don't know, 400 or something, I don't know, but he behaved like a two-year-old the whole time. And what happened was one of my teachers couldn't take it, and she got to where she was very angry with him. And as soon as he would turn his body or set something down or pick something up or whatever, she would just, you cannot do that. You do not understand. We told you this before. You know, and that is not productive. You can't do that. And so he got to where he would come in the room, and he'd be perfectly fine. But if he got sent to her group, before she even had a chance to say a word to him, he would go off. He'd throw something. He'd run out the door. He would do everything, because he knew already that she was mad at him. And she and I had a talk about it, and she said, I just can't stand it. I can't stand him. I can't stand doing that. There's Sam. See him throwing a big bag?
Yeah.
And he's sitting right there at parent night with his yellow red shirt on. I just had to talk to her and say, let's do this, since the two of you all don't get along very well and don't seem to be connecting very well.
Let's not get together.
Let's don't put him in your group for a while. And what I did was, my little seventh grader is working in choir with us, because she got over in the youth group, and it was a little too much for her on Wednesdays, because it's 7th through 12th grade, and she's kind of a young 7th grader anyway, and it was sort of overwhelming. And she loved Sunday school, but Wednesdays were just overwhelming. I mean, they talked about some things that were just way beyond what she wanted to talk about. So I said, why don't you come for a few months, and then after Christmas you can go, well, she loved it, and the children love her being in there. And if it was anybody else's, I mean, 10 years ago I would have said, we're not having teenagers over here teaching choir. This is not, you know, but here she came. And guess who can sit with that little child and make him do what he's supposed to do? That little 13-year-old person. He thinks she's wonderful. And I've instructed her very carefully, don't let him sit in your lap. Don't let him, he's not doing anything that anybody else is doing. You focus on causing him to look like everybody else in the group. Don't hold him in your lap. Don't carry him. Don't become his buddy. You're his teacher. And she's learned that well. And yes, they're buddies. But she can communicate with him in a way that that 30-whatever old adult couldn't do. And it's not anything about either one of them. It's just that you have to find the right hook for who you're dealing with, and it's always going to be different. But the danger, I think, with people like that is expecting less than what they can give. Don't do that. They can give a lot.